Hey, tourpreneurs, it's Mitch Bach, and just a quick note before we begin today's episode. Tourpreneur is currently sponsored by Google. We're thankful for their support of our community, and we are offering with them a completely free course helping you unlock the power and potential of Google's Things to Do program, which is specifically helping tour operators add their tours to Google in new ways that gives you new exposure and more direct bookings. To learn more, go to tourpreneur.com/Google. And as always, show notes, more resources, links to our newsletter, our business coaching community, and so much more are available on tourpreneur.com. Now to the episode. Hi, everybody. Welcome to a very special podcast of Tourpreneur. Usually our podcasts aren't so timely, but all the news in our Facebook group starting on Friday has been about a recent decision of Airbnb Experiences to pull a whole slew of their experiences inventory, leaving a lot of our tour operators in the lurch and wondering what's next for the platform and also what's next for them as experienced providers that have used Airbnb as a distribution partner. So this conversation is just really going to be about not only what's happened, reading the tea leaves, thinking about what's next for Airbnb, and then more importantly, it's about helping tour operators think about what their strategy should be moving forward. Peter Syme, let's start with you. What's going on with Airbnb right now? What's happening as a platform?
It's confusing. I mean, to me, it's a lot of talk, has been for years, and not actually doing anything. Obviously, they're hugely successful. They're a $98 billion, $100 billion company. The core product is still good. The core product still works. It's working at scale. It's growing still around the world. They're having supply issues in certain countries, certainly the country I'm in at the moment. Scotland's giving them severe supply issues because it's all been licensed. Therefore, a lot of them have come down. But anytime they try to launch a complementary product, the complementary experience, and we've had the experiences since 2016-17 when they launched it, it just never seems to work. And then the PR around it is always much, much louder than the actual delivery of it. And what we've seen over experiences over the last 5-6 years, they never opened up the pipes, never gave API connections, and never really did distribution properly. Therefore, you ended up with some hosts, some professionals trying to use it, but it was a bit of a mishmash with no real strategic direction. And maybe what we're seeing now is the outcome of that not having any strategic direction.
Yeah, you know, this is hot on the heels of a couple of weeks ago, the launch of Airbnb Icons. Chesky has always been a fantastic storyteller for the brand, got up on stage in his black shirt, a screen 10 times the height of him, and announced that there was going to be these new, incredibly low-cost, incredibly high-production-value experiences added onto their inventory, highlighting new commercial partners like Disney, Pixar, and the Paris Olympics, and things like that. So it made a big splash. It was a big PR effort, but they're inviting 4,000 participants to come and enjoy these activities over the course of the following year. And to me, it's kind of a big nothing sandwich in terms of changing the direction of what experiences is doing. What I didn't expect was that right after that, there'd be this massive culling. And now we don't know the size of it as of taping right now, how many experience operators, but what did surprise us, or at least surprise the tour operator community entrepreneurs Facebook group, is a lot of experiences were really high quality, high ranking, 5 stars or very close to that. In other words, it wasn't just removing the poor inventory and they weren't given a lot of advance notice. So are they clearing space for what's next, or are they realizing that this is just never going to be part of a profitable bottom line, especially when you have a business that theoretically can be solved a lot better and a lot easier in lodging?
Yes, I feel for all the operators, to be honest, because as you just said there, I can understand if we're getting rid of the ones that just weren't selling or weren't reviewed well or anything like that. But it's the ones that are, speaking to Zakia from Invisible Cities, her tours are ranking well, she sells well on Airbnb, and all hers have suddenly been removed, or at least a number of them have suddenly been removed. I personally think this is a move towards Airbnb going down the connected route. You mentioned Disney, you've mentioned all these other ones. I think maybe, we just don't know it yet, but I think maybe they've partnered with someone, whether that's another OTA or whoever, to then connect experiences into it. I think they're possibly going down that route, and they're slowly but surely getting rid of the experiences that they've currently got on there just now. Because it's the only way that Disney and all these other companies are going to be able to connect in is by connecting in through some sort of API that maybe they've created or using a third-party partner.
You've got to remember, although all their members and operators are saying my experiences were highly ranked and highly reviewed, and they're correct in that. That's because everything that was left on Airbnb experiences was highly ranked and highly reviewed. Because anything it wasn't had been removed over several years anyway. So if you're going to have a cull when all your product has got 4 and 5 star reviews, you can only have 4 star plus reviews on Airbnb, otherwise your product doesn't exist there. So it's not surprising me that it's highly ranked products that's going off. It does surprise me if it's high selling products and experiences, because obviously that's, and all OTAs work the same way, and Airbnb is not much different from any other OTA. There's certain products that sell a massive amount more than other products. So the fact that we're seeing some high revenue ones going off, high transaction numbers going off, that tells you this is just not ticking boxes to meet some new quality standard. That tells you there's a bigger strategy at play here. What that bigger strategy is, I don't think they're advanced enough to match up with an OTA's inventory going forward. And I think if they were doing that, doing this before you bring it in, I don't think, you may be right, Chris, but I just don't think they're clever enough to match that inventory with an OTA's inventory based on sales numbers without both sides exposing all their data. And I can't see both sides exposing all their data at this point in any potential relationships. So I really don't understand what they're doing with it. I just don't experience it. I don't think, as much as we're in the experience space, and we love it, and it's our passion, and it's our operator's passion, it doesn't move the needle on a $100 billion company to get it to $200 billion. No matter how much Chesky gets up and said this is a $1 trillion opportunity in experiences, if it was, it would be doing a lot more to address it now, and they're not, and it doesn't move that needle from $100 billion to $200 billion, which is his job. The market expects him to turn that into a $200 billion company, and experiences doesn't do that.
What surprised me, but what didn't surprise me, was the way they did the culling. I thought it was extremely disappointing for a company that especially preaches community first. They have an extremely active community forum base, on, especially on the lodging side, to send a direct message and tell people you have 3 weeks and you're being evicted from our platform after you've given us 5, 6, 7, sometimes 8 years of your loyalty, especially when they've closed API access and demanded, even though nobody followed that rule, demanded that you were exclusive to their platform. Strikes me as pretty poor taste. I wrote about that on LinkedIn this morning. I just thought it was a bad show for OTAs. OTAs already generally get really bad reputations among tour operators, not because they don't drive sales, but because the platforms aren't there to serve the supplier. And I get it. Their customer is a customer. It's a traveler. But you know what? What's behind just such a crass relationship with suppliers? Is it just because they don't even realize that they don't remember that they're human beings and that they're small business owners that deserve a little notice or support and resources behind what's next for them?
No, just another number.
You're dealing with a $100 billion company who happens to have on one side its supply, and all marketplaces are two-sided supply. One always, as you mentioned, one always takes precedent. In this case, the customer, the end user, takes precedent. The other one's second. So you're asking a $100 billion company with employees to have a voice that the tour operators understand. How many, so I would ask a question, how many ex-tour operators are working in Airbnb? How many Airbnb staff understand how tour operators work? How many Airbnb staff understand the pain, the slog to build these experiences, to market them, to service all of these customers? So the email that came out and the letter that came out, to me, wasn't surprising at all. It was just what a $100 billion company does. It's a corporate. It's a big, massive corporate that employs corporate-style people, and that's how corporate people communicate, especially when they're making changes. It's a big change to a lot of people at once, and they don't do it in a hands-on personal way. And I can't ever think of an example of a corporate doing it in a hands-on personal way. And they always send out something, it always ends up blown back in their face. But in the long run, it doesn't really matter. In the short term, it kicks up a fuss, but in the long run, it doesn't really matter as long as they've got their strategy sorted out and they get moving to where they're going. The question with Airbnb is none of us know where they're going.
Yeah, I mean, are we just victims of the way the platform economy works today, that these platforms serve investors, serve shareholders? The only way they get their money back is by scaling to a size in which supply is on an individual level inconsequential. I mean, you ask, you know, I don't know of any company that has done it in a humane way. I do, because I've worked with a lot of tour guide platforms that are nowhere near the scale, but they might be close to it. They might have several thousand tour guides on there. And I know some of them that work extremely closely with their guides, with their experience providers. And I'm mentioning guides because the Airbnb experience platform was essentially a guide platform. It was meant for individuals. You know, this is different than companies that work at scale with API connectivity to hop on, hop off buses, things that are at a larger corporate level. These were just individuals, you know, and it's sort of sad to me. I was an Airbnb host, not experience host, but a lodging host when they opened their shop, 15 years ago. I remember I'd get individual phone calls when I wasn't responding to my listing inquiries fast enough. And it was charming, you know, but it's funny. It's like, we look at those as antiquated days, but why can't that be the model? And I know it is the model for some, you know, for some companies out there that are doing really good work integrating curated tour operator supply in which they manage the relationship with a real close touch, or at least personal touch, and serve a happy customer. The problem is the mantra in our industry, or in any industry these days, is just like, yeah, but you can't scale that. You know, you raise so much money that you're beholden to a business model that dehumanizes everything along the way.
Yeah, as Pete says, to me, it's just another number. It's just, that's all they see, the suppliers, the operators being, and any OTA is the same way. You know, you can't have unlimited numbers of account managers serving every single experience provider, every single, you know, accommodation provider. And I imagine they will have a certain level of that once, you know, if it's an accommodation or experience provider earning a certain amount of level when they're sort of generating income to a certain level. But for the most of them, no one will have anyone to talk to and stuff like that. And that, yeah, as you say, just the timing of those emails straight after icons, the way it was done, and how fast they've been pulled offline. There was no real sort of warning to say, like, this is coming. It's just like, okay, we're doing this and that's it. That's the side of it, I think, could have been worded. But I understand what Pete's saying with the corporate side. I think that's just how they get stuff done. And it's, if anything, it just shows that, maybe that's controversial, but in my sense, if I was a tour operator, it's like, you can't really blame the OTAs for this, for doing anything like this. What you need to do is make sure that as a tour operator business, that you're not overly reliant on the OTAs. And this is a prime example of this happening. You make one change to an algorithm, you make one change to a product listing, whatever that be, no matter if it's Google, Airbnb, whatever, any type of business that does these things. If you rely on those businesses too much, it can come back to bite you in the backside, really. So you need to diversify, have it on different platforms, have those strong direct channels, do all these different things that you need to make sure that you've got a strong revenue channel. And if you are just reliant on getting loads of bookings through one platform like Airbnb, then ultimately that was down to the operator itself not diversifying properly.
Yeah, we've ranted on about this, and I've ranted on about it for decades. And distribution is distribution. If you've got more than 10% dedicated to any platform or any partner, it's not just platforms, it's any partner. If you've got more than 10% of your revenue dedicated to any partner, your business is at risk because you're not controlling the business. Because more than 10% of your revenue disappearing overnight hurts. More than 20% starts to more than hurt. It can start to be critical for your business. If it's more than 30%, well, your business is going to disappear overnight if somebody walks away from you. So again, this stuff isn't rocket science. You need to have as many partners as you can, which will grow your business. Having more partners will grow your business. But it takes your percentage with each partner down as you add partners. I mean, when I'm working with operators, the thing we spend most of our time on is growing more distribution partners. Get another partner in, another partner in, another partner in. because the more partners you can manage, the less risk you have in your business. And I'm not saying 10% is the exact number for every business model, but to me, it feels a safe number where it hurts me to lose 10% of my revenue, but it doesn't kill me. Anything more than that starts to become really serious. So if all the operators listening, when you look at your distribution, if it is unbalanced, you only have one job going forward. Get that distribution balanced or it will come back and bite you. It's only a matter of time. Whether you're the biggest operator or the smallest operator, size doesn't matter in this game when you're dealing with large partners and large platforms. They will come and bite you unless you have a distributed network of partners that is a fair risk and reward to your business.
Yeah, you know, I live in New York City where the majority of people rent their apartments, and renting is fine, except that you need to remember that you're renting from a landlord that has a series of criteria and reasons to suddenly boot you the minute that they want to boot you. It's an imperfect metaphor because renting comes with certain protections. And in our industry, there aren't that many protections around you renting the space, whether it's on Google Ads or Meta Ads or on a platform. And Chris, when it comes to figuring out a stable in this environment, it's a hard question, but a stable path forward for those Airbnb experience hosts who are now left in the lurch, what do you recommend? Because search is up in the air, paid is up in the air. What do you recommend doing as a marketer?
Yeah, no, there are definitely battles everywhere you look now. No, the OTAs are doing these changes. No, there's loads of tracking issues now with various marketing platforms, and especially in certain countries like the EU and stuff like that. And everything else is even harder to track these things these days. But as Pete's saying, the first thing that's, you know, I actually spoke to an operator today who's from Italy, saying, "Oh, what should I do to sell more tours? Because suddenly they've just dropped off a cliff from Get Your Guide, for example." And I says, "Well, you need to get on more platforms." That's the first thing, as Pete says, get onto more platforms, get onto more distribution. That's going to give you more eyeballs on your tours and hopefully getting more bookings and stuff like that way. So any operator needs to get onto those different OTAs and different platforms and as many of them as possible. From there, start looking at your direct channels, build up direct channels, and that'd be through SEO, through content, making sure your website's on point. That does take time. That can take, you know, many years to get to there. So the only other option is paid advertising, be it through Google or Facebook or Instagram or any other platform. Generally, because some destinations, Google is just too expensive because there's such great competition. Doesn't mean you can't win there. It just means you need to spend a lot to get those bookings in. So it's just not viable for a lot of different people. So Facebook is still the cheapest advertising platform out there to get in front of customers at the dreaming stage through to that sort of planning stage as well, and then hopefully they will book. So it's thinking about the campaign and what you can do through each of those stages of dreaming, planning, and then booking to get them along that journey through Facebook advertising. And that's, to me, still one of the best platforms out there to do that with, and you don't need to spend as much money on those platforms as you would do on Google, for example. And hopefully with the experiences that they've been doing on Airbnb and things like that, maybe hopefully they've been building up an email list, capturing people's details, things like that, and then they'll be able to email people and start doing email campaigns and try to build up some recommendations that way as well, get word of mouth out there, and just say in your emails, "Look, Airbnb have, for once of a better word, screwed us over. We need to get out there, we need to share the story, we need to, you know, regenerate, get our bookings and revenue back up again. Can you help?" And if customers have had a great time with them, some of them will maybe help them and stuff like that. So think about what you've been doing in the past with past customers as well and trying to get those recommendations in.
I would be feeding the Google baby, because we know search is changing as we speak. No one on the planet can tell you where it's going at the moment with all the AI changes on search. All we know is it's going to be different. We also know it's going to be distributed, so you're going to have multiple routes to search via Instagram, via Messenger, via WhatsApp. You're going to go into search via many different ways rather than always defaulting to Google. My own search volume is down massively. I don't use Google for search anywhere near the volume I did in the past. So we do know it's going to change. However, we do know Google's the biggest travel company in the world by far. We do know they have all the data, and we do know that they can surface your tour operator or not surface it. But they only reward effort. They only reward it if you've got your Google's business profile 100%. They only reward it if you update your Google's business profile all the time. Google things to do. Have you got that nailed? The more you keep that Google baby fed, the more you align with Google, the more Google will align with you, even in an AI world, because they still want to provide the customer, the end user, with the best route to the answer. So I would say the effort that going into Google going forward hasn't decreased, it's actually increased. It's just more complex because we are placing bets rather than, for the last 30 years, we all knew how to do SEO, get rankings, et cetera, et cetera, do some PPC on top of that. And it was pretty, you could sit down with a spreadsheet and work it out and carry on and know what your return is going to be. We're moving into a period where that's not going to be as black and white. But if I was betting my money, my company, I would be spending more time with Google at the moment than I ever have done in the past. Because the changes that are coming, I'll try to do anything. Because dropping product off Airbnb or any other OTA is nothing compared with dropping product off Google.
Yeah. I was going to say,
most operators at 50, 60, 70, 80% of the volume comes from, you've got to remember, all these OTAs together are only single-digit percentage of the market. Therefore, all that other business is coming in other routes, and Google's the number one route for that.
I was going to say, if you look at the common factor between Google Search, what's coming up with AI, they've obviously introduced the AI trip planner, voice, all these different things. The main factor that goes through all that is content. So if the operators are producing really good content that answers the questions properly for what people are searching for or asking for or we're putting into AI, all that's getting pulled into all these different platforms. So this is when content has always been a key factor for SEO from back in the day all the way through to now, and it's still a key factor, but it's even more so because of AI, because of voice, because of all these different things that are coming out. So it's being on top of your SEO game, as it were, with writing new content and making sure that you're answering the questions that people are asking. You're offering really good advice. You're not selling. You're offering really good advice about your destination, about your experiences and all these different things, and being helpful. And part of that dreaming stage that I was mentioning, being helpful to the end user. And if that's what people are searching for, if they're looking for that inspiration, if they're looking for things to do, then hopefully your content will then show up across multiple different Google platforms. So yeah, content is for me, the running theme through all, and it's just making sure you keep on top of that.
There is two ways to look at that, though, because Google's also killing content en masse at the moment. It just depends who's producing the content. If you're a travel blogger, or if you're a travel review site, or someone who aggregates, if you look at their rankings over the last X number of weeks and months, they've been decimated. And they've been virtually put out of business. So content is content, and I agree Google does reward content, but there's no guarantees going forward that content is going to be the driver. And certainly it's destroying a lot of content-based businesses at the moment. What I am seeing, though, we all are playing and experimenting with AI every single day. It is still driving traffic and links to well-structured websites that are playing the Google game. Someone who's playing the Google game and's got everything updated and is linked into Google, is using Google Drive, is using Gmail, anybody who's totally aligned with Google seems to be getting rewarded.
Conspiracy. Great. So we have to both create more content and also know that creating all that content might be A, futile, or worse, B, feeding the beast that's ultimately going to kill our business and our direct path towards them. Good times ahead. I feel like, Pete, there's one thing that you harp on about all the time, which is actually maybe the surest bet here. It's pretty radical. It's called meeting and connecting with other potential human business partners and forging relationships.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't understand it because I'm old. I just don't understand it today. But we have a generation, several generations below us, who seem to think they've built businesses because they've connected with everyone digital. And if you built it on a bunch of platforms, within X weeks of launching your business, you could have hundreds of bookings. That's not a business. That is a high-risk endeavor that you've just connected digitally with some other people and they've sent you business. The way you build a resilient business, a business is going to last for 20 years, 30 years, and longer, is building relationships with other companies. In today's world, video does it brilliantly. In my day, it was lots and lots of chapping on doors, making partnerships with all of the businesses who are related to you in your district, in your area, and then spreading out from there. Nothing rewards and nothing will keep rewarding with minimum risk is human-to-human partnerships with business-to-business in your local area. Because these businesses tend not to be giant, they tend not to be global platforms, they tend not to forget about you because you're all in the same game. So start asking yourselves, how many hotel partners I've got, how many restaurant partners I've got, how many bar partners I've got, how many other activity partners I've got, how many taxi company partners I've got. That number isn't 50 plus, right? It needs to be way more than 50 plus. And that's where effort and hard work needs to go into. And it's not straightforward because you have to go and meet people. You have to pick up the phone and cold call. You have to set up meetings. But it will build a resilience into your business that means you don't get slapped on the face when some platform takes your bookings down and you're wondering where all your business is going.
I forget where I read it or saw it this week, but it was somebody talking about doing that kind of risk-taking outbound, go and meet sales, potential sales partners. And they said you should set a goal for rejections every week. It should be 5 no's, 10 no's, 20 no's, because A, it builds resilience, and B, if you're getting that many no's, then it means chances are you're going to get some yeses thrown in there. Sometimes you do a lot of research looking for the one perfect partner. You weed out the other 5, 7, 12, 20 potential people that might not be great partners, but it is a numbers game. And also, you don't know in advance what kind of partner is going to actually become a really interesting and helpful partner. You mentioned a taxi company. You might write it off as, oh, they just provide random transport services. But if there's a relationship in your town where there's a predominant company that handles all the airport transfers, and they've got a little card or pamphlet in the back of your van, and the cab driver is trained at, you know, mentioning the best way to get an orientation to the city is, you know, you got to call my buddy over here. Listen, that speaks volumes. You don't know what you don't know. You know, I feel like that's just general human. The problem with human psychology is we tend to formulate these ideas in advance, these hypotheses. We don't test them enough, and we don't also understand that there's probably 30 alternatives to running a successful business with different kinds of partners that you haven't imagined yet. That only comes through creating that network effect of connecting with as many people as you possibly can.
There's some data around that actual building business-to-business partners. Multiple universities have studied it. If you've got 100 potential partners in a B2B relationship, in any given year, there is only 20 of them buying. They're all buyers. Every one of them is buyers. But in any given year, there's only 20 of them buying. In the travel industry, that's slightly skewed because those 20 buyers tend to be buying at similar times of the year because we are seasonally. But if you understand that, that means you need to chap on the door of hundreds, because on any given year, there's only 20 buyers, and you're not going to close all 20. If you close 20% of the 20, you've done well. So you've closed 4. You may have to chap on 100 doors to close 4. But the more doors you knock on, the more you will close, the more you're related to those doors. So the way I always done it was I went from the center out based on geography. Who's the businesses closer to my businesses? Because they knew who I was. Then went out on another circle, then out in another circle. Eventually, you get to a place where people don't know who you are, and it's a much harder sell. Right? But within your locality, there's lots of people who you can pass business to and you can pass business back to. But this isn't a 1 month, 2 month, 3 month project. This is a never-ending, the whole time you're a tour operator, this is a job you do all year. The question I ask every tour operator before I take them on as clients or if we're working with them is, honestly, how much percentage of your time in any given week is spent to sales, marketing, and business development? And the honest ones have often come back with less than 10%. And you're not building a business with less than 10% of your time spent on sales, marketing, and business development. It's just not happening.
Yeah, but it's important to choose the right font and color scheme for your website, Pete. spend 3 months on the right name.
So what we're saying is good old-fashioned networking. That's what works. Can't be
that seems to be the only sure bet these days.
Yeah.
This was more depressing than I thought it was going to be.
I don't want the operators shouldn't be depressed. There's 2 billion extra customers coming into travel. Travel is booming. It's going to continue booming. There's lots of issues in the world, but they're in the best place possible because travel is exploding. There's lots of interest in travel from the money side, from the technology side, and from the customer side. So travel is, I've never seen it as buoyant in my life as it is now. So the opportunity is there. It's just becoming more complicated how you get that actual opportunity. don't go away depressed just because Airbnb's kicked you off or another platform's kicked you off. That's a kick up the backside to go and get in amongst this boom that is going on with travel around the world. And yes, it will be like this. It will go up and down, peaks and troughs. But the general trend is travel is exploding and you happen to be an operator in the best time ever in the travel industry.
Maybe second best. I would have entered when Facebook ads were really cheap.
We benefit from that.
second best time. But you're right. I also think it's a lesson in looking where other people aren't looking. Don't just jump on the bandwagon. Don't create an experience in a company that looks like every other one. And don't go fishing in the same pond as everybody else. There's a lot of untapped new pathways in terms of creating customer bases that I know for a fact work, because I know a bunch of tour operators right now using them. They would kill me if I mentioned their methods to a huge audience, so I won't mention it. But they're ones that are thinking outside of the box in terms of who they're approaching and how they're charting a kind of sales and marketing pathway through this industry. Pete, Chris, thank you. Our sales pitch here for Tourpreneur is we have two resources coming out this week that would be helpful for everybody out there right now. One is going to be a giant technology and partner directory that includes, I think it's like 150, 175 OTA partners that we have painstakingly spent the last couple of years trying to organize into an online directory that is for our professional members, and a totally free and out there in the public resource on optimizing yourself for Google Things to Do is available as well. And that is a no-brainer. Get that business profile going. Get that get your reviews, your review engine working. Make sure you are optimizing your OTA listings if you are on those platforms, and use those directories and resources in order to grow your partnership list and diversify your business. And as always, thanks everyone for listening. You can get notes on this and everything I mentioned on tourpreneur.com. And that's today's episode. If you need show notes from today's conversation, make sure you go to tourpreneur.com, and there you'll also find so much more, including our free course on Google Things to Do, leading to more direct bookings and more exposure on Google, available again at tourpreneur.com/Google.